Hey, church, good to see you. I don't know if you liked that last song or not, but that was actually written by Ben, the guy who was singing it. He was one of our music guys here at Grace, and so just kind of a cool thing. Last week, we started a new series on the life of a guy named Daniel, who was a God follower, and he lived about 2,500 years ago, and he was kidnapped around the age of 14 from his home and from his family and was taken 500 miles away to the ancient city of Babylon, which was a very anti-God place, and it was a culture that did not hold to the same values that we as Christians would hold to. And so my goal is for us as a church for the next few weeks, as our nation is gearing up for this election and we'll experience the consequences and the chaos that will come along with that no matter which side wins, my plan is that we as Christians, we should be asking the question, how does a God follower navigate secular culture and political chaos? Okay, what does that look like in our life? Like, how do I, as a true believer, like how do I live my life when my boss isn't interested and my professor is completely against God and my friends are always trying to pull me away from God, and when I have a president and a government, leaders who just don't hold to the same values as I hold to? And as we look at the world around us, the question is, you know, how do I live as a believer when the world sure seems to be in opposition to the way of life that God has called me to live? And so that's where the book of Daniel comes in, because Daniel is just a great balance between practice and perspective, right? Practice and perspective. The book of Daniel helps us understand the world that we live in, and then it helps us understand how to move around within it. Okay, and so that's what we're going to be looking at. Last week, we talked more about practice. We watched specifically as Daniel and his three friends, they get taken, they lose everything, and they go to work for King Nebuchadnezzar, who happens to be the most powerful man on earth at that point in time. And he was the king that actually kidnapped them and had them taken. And so this guy was their enemy. And when that happens, Daniel and his friends, like, they don't understand the why. Right? Isn't that happens like when we are living our life, we're doing our thing, and something bad enters our life? Isn't that the question that we ask? Like, we're just like, why? Why does this have to happen? What's God doing? Hey, God, do you see what's going on in my life? All right, I'm sure Daniel and his friends felt the same way, but they don't know the why. But they go with the flow until it conflicted with God's teaching, and that was Daniel's line. So for Daniel, as a 14-year-old kid, it's like, okay, you want to re-educate me, all right, and indoctrinate me, whatever that means. Okay, I'll go with it. All right, you want me to learn the Babylonian language, and you want me to learn this new culture? Okay, I can handle that. You want me to work for the oppressive foreign government, all right, of Babylon, actually, that is my natural enemy? I will do that. I will serve you. You want me to give my allegiance to your God and to your values? Nah. Right? I can't do that. And if you remember, specifically last week, we looked at how Daniel was determined, meaning he had made a decision in his mind that he was going to do the right thing even when the world was against him. And so Daniel pushed back. Remember, just as a 14-year-old kid, but the way he does that is different than how I think a lot of us, we naturally push back on the things around us that shouldn't be there, that aren't good. Daniel does this with gentleness and kindness, and God blesses him and his friends for it, and they gain the respect of all the people around him. And so last week, we had this great example that we looked at, and what it looks like practically from a teenager, all right, what it looks like to push back against culture when it conflicts with the way that God calls us to live our life. Today, it's going to be more about perspective. And we knew last week that God was moving the pieces in the background, but now we're going to see God reveal himself, and we're going to see God flex a little bit, okay? Does that make sense? All right, and so today, I'll tell you the same thing as I did last week. Today, I hope it's not like this every week, but today's going to be complicated. All right, we're going to be going through some history. We're going to be talking about some weird dreams and just some kind of weird stuff like that. And so stick with me, and we'll try to get through this together, hopefully with all of us still intact, okay? Does that make sense? Okay, some of you guys are already sleeping. That's cool, all right? It just makes me all bored up here, but here we go. Okay, Daniel chapter 2, verse 1 says, in the second year of his reign, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams that troubled him and sleep deserted him. Have you ever been there before? All right, where you got something in your life, maybe some situation in your life where you're just so stressed out about it that you can't sleep and you can't get your minds off of it. And it's you're like anxious, like you got some anxiety about it. It's just all worried. You've been there before? Okay, we've all been there. Nebuchadnezzar, who's the most powerful man on the planet, struggled, by the way, with the same thing that we all have struggled with in our life. And so he can't sleep and he is super stressed. I've noticed for me, when I'm stressed out about something, I might not even like realize I am, but I'll notice that my dreams kind of start reflecting it. Like I start dreaming about it and like things go wrong and stuff like that. Just yesterday, I woke up I was like in a sweat. You've ever been there from a dream? And the dream was actually about our playground, all right, for our this new addition here. And I came into work one day, and I walked in, and the playground people were just like wrapping up. Okay, so the playground is this sweet, huge thing. I think you saw a picture about that earlier in the service with Mike. But I walked in, it was like a little Tykes like plastic play thing, and I was just like, oh man. All right, that can't be right. And they're like, no, yeah, this is what came all the way from Wales, wherever that is. You know, this is, you know, it came across the Atlantic. Here it is. We put it together for you. And I was like, this ain't going to work. This is not what the picture looked like, you know. And they were kind of going back and forth with me. And one thing that's kind of funny to me is that my subconscious knows that I am weird like this, but like it wasn't level, okay? So like my subconscious added that in there. Not only is it like this little Tykes plastic like cheap thing, but it also is like at a slant. And I was like, and what about the slant? Like, can you fix that at least? You know, it's just like, what is going on? And I woke up, I'm like sweating. I'm like, oh, it's just a dream. Okay, like what was I going to explain to the people, to you? That'd be so embarrassing. And so here, Nebuchadnezzar, right, he's struggling with the same thing. He wakes up and in a cold sweat and he's like, oh man, I have that dream again, like, what does this mean? And so the king gave orders to bring in all the magicians, the mediums, the sorcerers, basically all of his advisors to tell the king his dreams. And when they came and they stood before the king, he said to them, he says, hey, I've had a dream and I'm anxious to understand it. All right, I got some anxiety going on. I'm worried. I'm kind of freaking out a little bit because I've had this exact same dream over and over and over again. And so I need to figure this thing out. And so the advisors, they spoke to the king and they say, hey, I'm glad you called me in. We all happen to be experts in this very area. All right, may the king live forever. Tell us, we are your servants. All right, we're here to help. We're here to serve you, king. Tell us the dream and then we'll give you the interpretation. And so these guys, if you can imagine this, in the throne room of Babylon, you got Nebuchadnezzar, he's sitting on his like giant golden throne, he's doing his thing. And you can imagine these guys, they're kind of parading around, they're like, oh, king, you are the greatest of all time, all right, you are the greatest king, no problem, I'm sorry that you're having some dreams and got some issues and you don't need to be anxious about it, all right, we got you. Here's what we need you to do. Why don't you tell us the dream and we'll tell you what it means. By the way, did I mention you're the greatest king ever? All right, so that's what they're doing. And what actually, in archaeology, what they found is that they actually had these little manuals, like these little books that would tell you what different symbols in the dream mean. So in my dream, it might be like, they probably didn't have like playgrounds and stuff, right? But they might be like, what was the color of it? And I'd be like, oh, it was blue. And they're like, blue? Oh, well, let's look in our, they're flipping through their pages and they're like, well, blue means this. Right, so this is what's going on. And so they had this little book that they would kind of plug a dream into. And so if you saw a bird or you saw a statue, or you saw a rock or whatever it might be, you know, they would tell you exactly what those symbols meant from their little manual. And so it would all usually be very general, of course, and it would all be generally positive. It's kind of like a fortune cookie, you know what I mean? Like you open it up and it's like an exciting opportunity lies ahead. And you're like, okay, that's cool, all right? General, extremely general, and positive. So they're saying, you tell us the dream, we'll plug it into our little manual, and then we will give you the answer. But this dream, it freaks Nebuchadnezzar out so much that he doesn't want just a general answer. He wants the truth. And he's beginning not to trust that these guys actually know what they're doing. So it says, the king replied, he says, my word is final, as you all know. And they're like, okay, yeah, we get that. He says, here's the deal. If you don't tell me the dream, I want you to tell me my dream. And its interpretation, he says, you will be torn limb for limb and your houses will be made into a garbage dump. Okay? Not cool, right? Right? All right. He says, but if you make the dream and its interpretation known to me, you'll receive gifts and I'll give you rewards and you'll get honor from me. Like, I will honor you. And so make the dream and its interpretation known to me. All right. So that's what's going on here. He wants them to tell him the interpretation. That's what he's all about. But in order to prove that they actually know what the interpretation is, he wants them to tell him his own dream that he hasn't told anybody. And so what Nebuchadnezzar does here, it's smart. He's saying, prove to me that you have the power to actually interpret dreams. Prove to me that what you're going to tell me is actually true by telling me my dream. By the way, these are the same guys who are claiming to have power to help him lead and rule the kingdom. And so these are the men who are giving him advice saying, hey, this is what you should do. Hey, you should listen to me. Hey, this is what I think. This is what's going on. And so here's Nebuchadnezzar. Remember, he's young at this point. He's in his second year as king. And he's, I mean, for him, it's just like, man, I don't know who's telling me the truth or not. And so he decides to test them. And it'd be totally different if it was just a one-time thing. You know, like he had some bad tacos the night before and he woke up. He's like, wow, okay, that was weird. And he's just sitting around the room with his buddies like, hey, check out this dream. What do you think? Think that might mean something? But that's not what's going on. Here he's had the same dream over and over and over again, and it bothers him. And on top of that, he's the king. He's the king over the biggest, he's the king that basically rules over all of everybody on earth at that point, and he's making real decisions in a real world, and he wants to make decisions based on truth. And so he has to decide what's true. We too, as we all know, okay, we all live in a world that's extremely difficult to find truth. Have you noticed that? Okay, extremely difficult, especially within the political climate that we live in, especially with the election happening this month, you know, just everything that's going on. Like, we find it difficult to figure out what's actually true. You know, you're watching TV, you're watching the game yesterday, and it's like all these commercials are, you know, political commercials are coming up that are like, you know, pointing at somebody else, the other candidate, saying, hey, they did this, and they said this, and you're just like, man, I don't even know what's true. One of the funniest things, funny, you know, I find funny, maybe you don't find funny, but one of the things that I've noticed is, like, one of the best examples is, like, issue one, okay, and I'm not trying to get political, that's not my point here, but as you're driving around town, I'll notice you have issue one, which is about gerrymandering. If you don't know what that is, Google it, okay? But it's about drawing up districts and stuff. And you'll go past a sign that says, vote yes on issue one, and, you know, to end gerrymandering. And you're like, okay, that sounds pretty good. And then you go by another sign that says, vote no on issue one to end gerrymandering. You're like, I don't know which one I'm supposed to vote for. At least we can all agree on one thing. It seems like everybody hates the gerrymandering thing in theory. I don't even know. But it's like, you know, I'm all for that, but like, which one do I vote? They're both saying the same thing, which means one has to be true. Or maybe it should be, maybe one has to be not true. Maybe they're both not true. I don't know. All right, and so I'm like calling up friends. I'm like texting them, like, hey, you know, getting ready to vote. You know what? You know anything about the issue one thing? And everybody's like, no, that I've talked to. And so I'm sure there's people out there that you know everything around that issue and everything about voting for it. I think this has nothing to do with it, what I'm talking about, but I think I'm probably voting no on it because I think it's going to get worse if we vote yes. But anyway, if that bothers you, it's probably going to pass anyway, so you win in the end and you could be happy. But anyway, this has nothing to do with what I'm talking about. But this is what I'm saying. All right, it's so hard to find truth. It's so hard. And Nebuchadnezzar feels that. And he has experienced that. And he doesn't know who to trust. And so he wants the interpretation of the dream. That's the main thing he wants. But to prove that it's true, he also wants them to tell him his own dream. And so for the advisors, the stakes are high, right? Literally, if they can't do it, he is going to pull their arms off and their legs off until they die, okay? Not cool, all right? That's not what anybody wants. And so when he says this isn't just like a figure of speech, okay? This is ancient Babylon. They do that, okay? And so they're like, no, we're really going to pull off your arms and legs, and that will hurt a lot, and you'll die eventually. So they don't want that. The stakes are high. And they're like, they answered a second time. They try again. They're like, okay, we are your servants, All right, we're all for you. We are on the same side, king. He says, so just tell us the dream and we'll make the interpretation known. Like, we'll tell you the interpretation. And the king replies, he's like, well, I know for certain that you are trying to gain some time. He's saying, I know what you're doing. All right, you're trying to stall. You're trying to just hold off on time, hoping that I will change my mind. And so the advisors are in real trouble, and they push back even further. They say, but here's the deal, king. No one on earth can make known what the king requests. They're saying, there is no man who can do what you're trying to ask us to do. And consequently, no king, however great or powerful, has ever asked anything like this out of any of their advisors. This just has never happened. And what the king is asking is so difficult that no one can make it known to him except for the gods. And the gods, they believed in all kinds of gods. And they're like, except for the gods whose dwelling place is not with us. Okay, so maybe the gods know, but we're not the gods. And so because of this, when the king hears it, he became violently angry and he gave orders to destroy all the wise men of Babylon, all of them. And so the decree went out, signed, sealed, stamped, right? And it was issued that the wise men were to be all executed. And they searched for Daniel and his friends to execute them. So Daniel and his friends run into yet another problem as young teenagers, okay? The problem is that if you remember last week how that ended, last week Daniel and the boys, they got a promotion to be part of the advisors as the king. The bad news with that is they got promoted at the time when the king is going to kill all those people who got promoted. Okay, so they're in that batch, and they're going to die with all of the other advisors. But Daniel responded with tact and discretion. Let me just throw this out there: some of you would do well if you could learn how to respond with tact and discretion when the world does things that you don't like. Okay? All right? That's what Daniel does. As a high school kid, he's learned that. And he responds with tact and discretion to Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, who had gone out to execute the wise men of Babylon. So here's the guy who comes up, and he's like, hey, Daniel, don't know if you heard, but I have to kill you. Okay? I'm sorry about that. And so he's telling Daniel this, and Daniel, he's like, before you kill me, just wait. Hold up. I got one question. And that is why? He's like, why is the decree from the king so harsh? And Arioch then explained the situation to Daniel. He's like, okay, here's what's going on, Daniel. So there's like this dream thing, and they brought in some of his advisors, and they offended him because they couldn't tell him the dream, but he really wants the interpretation. It's kind of a big mess, but it doesn't really matter because I am ordered to kill you. And so really, it has nothing to do with you. You know, me and you, we're still good, okay? But I'm going to kill you. I got to rip off your arms. It's not going to be pleasant, but we're still good, right? Like, maybe that conversation went kind of like that. Okay, I don't know. I wasn't there. The Bible doesn't tell us. But Daniel, he's there, and he's like, okay, take me to the king. And so he goes before the king, and he asks the king to give him some time. Now notice, right? Daniel doesn't ask the king to reconsider his order. Daniel doesn't go to the king and say, hey, yo, this is a really stupid idea. Okay, you're going to kill us all by pulling off our arms? Like, I'm not into that. All right, he doesn't go to the king and say, hey, I just don't think this is the wisest thing for you to do as your advisor. All right, I'm just saying, I don't advise for you to kill me, okay? He doesn't go to the king and try to talk the king out of his decision. No, he goes to the king and he says, hey, just give me some time. I think I could give you what you're looking for. And so he asked for that. He asked for time. And then Daniel went to his house, and he told his friends, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah about the matter, and urging them to ask the God of heavens for mercy concerning this mystery, so Daniel and his friends would not be destroyed with the rest of Babylon's wise men. And so it's interesting here, Daniel has no idea what the dream is about, right? He's got no clue. See, last week when we met Daniel, if you remember, we read this in a verse, but we did not talk about it, is there was this like tiny side note that said, God gave Daniel the unique ability to interpret dreams, okay? And if you remember that last week, it kind of felt random. You're like, okay, well, what's that mean? Not really sure. God was moving the pieces on the board, but we didn't quite understand what he was doing. But even so Daniel has this unique ability to interpret the dream. So if the king would just tell him the dream, I mean, Daniel could interpret it accurately. But the issue is, he has to convince the king that his interpretation is true. And in order to do that, he has to pass the king's test, which for any man is impossible. He has to tell the king his dream. So what does Daniel do? Well, he goes to his dorm room. He finds his friends, and they all get on their knees, and they pray. See, sometimes in life, we're faced with what we feel is like an impossible situation. Right? You ever been there? Right? It's always something, like what I've experienced, or at least in my experience, I've always noticed, it's always something that's out of our control. Okay, some impossible situation in our life, like we're faced with some sickness, or maybe the words of cancer enter our life, or maybe it's a death of someone that we cared about a lot, or maybe it's our child. They've grown up and they're going down the wrong path. We don't know how to correct them, or maybe we're just kind of, you know, in this age or this time, we're looking at our country and we don't like the way that it's headed. It is about politics for you, and there's nothing that you can really do. And we look around, and it's always out of our control. And when it's out of our control, we feel so small. We're like, I don't know if there's anything I can do. Like, there's nothing we can do. Or some of us, we don't even know what we could do. We feel like the world is so out of control. Some of you guys, maybe you even feel that this morning. You got some situation in your life that is beyond your control, and you just don't know. You're like, you're just stuck. See, we feel like the world and the situations around us are out of our grasp. And by the way, can I just say this? I think that's a very, 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 very good place for us to be. I think that's actually good for us to be in a situation where the only thing we can do is lean on God. That is good for us to be there. We don't like being there because it's uncomfortable and we hate it. But it's good for us to be there. That's where Daniel and his friends are. And so they get together and they pray. And the mystery was then revealed to Daniel in a vision at night. And Daniel prays the God of the heavens. See, God didn't have to show Daniel what the dream meant. We get that right? We understand that? All right, God didn't have to answer Daniel's prayer request. I think a lot of us, we get upset with God because we're for some reason, under the understanding of, all right, if I'm a Christian and I give my life to Jesus and then some problem enters our life, we're like, yo, God, what's going on? We may have ignored him for like months and months and months, but then when the problem enters, we go to God. We're like, hey, God, I got this problem. I need you to fix it. And then we get mad at God for not fixing our problem the way that we told God to fix our problem, okay? That doesn't work. That's not reality. God doesn't owe us anything. He doesn't have to fix our problems the way that we want him to fix it. He doesn't have to rescue out of our problems at all. I mean, think about Daniel and his situation. He didn't answer all of Daniel's prayers the way that Daniel wanted. See, for us as Christians, I think a lot of times we view this story, and we may know this story from back when we were just little kids in Sunday school and stuff, and we view this as a Bible story, and it's like, yeah, okay, you know, I know how this goes. You know, Daniel, he's there, and he's got this enemy, the king, and he's got this dream, and then they have this huge problem, but then he prays to God, and God fixes it, and everything kind of goes through, and Daniel's a hero, yada, yada, yada. That's kind of what we think. And you're sitting there thinking, you're like, that's how this story is going to go, but that's not my life. That's not how it goes in my life. See, what we got to realize is, think about Daniel's life up to this point. He's lost everything. Like, don't you think he prayed to go home as a high school kid? Don't you think he prayed that he would see his family again? Hey, don't you think, I mean, men, I'm just saying, throwing this out there, don't you think when he found out that he was going to be made into a eunuch, and they're like, snip, snip, all right, come over here. Don't you think he prayed hard that time? All right, I think he prayed hard that day. Yet God didn't send him home. And God didn't probably allow him to see his family. And God did not keep him from physical pain. See, God does not have to answer our prayers the way that we want. The thing that we got to remember in our mind is that he is all powerful, meaning he can answer our prayer. And he is all good, meaning he does what's best. See, some of us, we keep praying that God will get you out of this situation that you're in. And God's like, no, I'm not going to save you from it. I'm going to help you through it. But God decides to save Daniel and his friends and the advisors. And so in this particular situation, on this prayer, God reveals Nebuchadnezzar's weird dream to Daniel. It says, therefore, Daniel went to Arioch, all right, this is the hitman, okay, the guy who's out there to kill Daniel, and whom the king had assigned to destroy the men of Babylon. And he says to him, he says, hey, don't destroy the wise men of Babylon. Real quick, all right, Daniel just doesn't want to save his own hide, okay? He wants to help everyone, even those who disagree with him spiritually, and even those who disagree with him politically, all right, his enemies. He says, don't destroy them. Bring me before the king, and I will give him the interpretation. And so Arioch quickly brought Daniel before the king. Then he said to him, he says, hey, king, all right, you're the best king. You're awesome king. All right, I happen to have found a man among the Judean exiles who can let the king know the interpretation. Hey, I know how to fix your problem. I got this guy here. He could take care of it. All right, this is that guy at work that you know that uses anything good to advance himself. All right, this is the guy who, like, he might not even be much part of the things that are going well, you know, but he takes those things. He's like, yeah, look what my team did and look what my company did. I was part of this. I was part of that. All right, he's that guy. And so the king says to Daniel, he says, are you able to tell me the dream that I had and its interpretation? You could do both? And Daniel says, no. By the way, not a good way to start out, okay? He says, there is nobody, no wise man, no medium, no advisor who would ever be able to make known to the king the mystery that he's asked about. Nobody could tell you your dream, right? There's no man that could do that. But there is a God in heaven. See, sometimes you'll get to the point in life, like Nebuchadnezzar, where all human strategies have failed to fix your problem. Right? You'll get to the point in life where society fails to solve your problem, and the media fails to solve your problem, and scientists fail to solve your problem, and the experts, so-called experts, fail to solve your problem, and the celebrities, they can't solve your problem, and the TikTokers, they fail to solve your problem, and even you fail to solve your problem. And you might be standing there, you're like, okay, I've tried to make this relationship work, like I've tried everything, and I feel like there's no hope. The thing we got to remember is, but there is a God in heaven. And you might be sitting there saying, well, I got this health problem, and I've tried to do everything that the doctors have told me to do, and the health nuts have told me to do, and I've done everything right, and it just feels like nothing is working. And what you need to remember is, but there is a God in heaven. And you might have some addiction that you're stuck on, and you're trying to overcome that addiction, but it just keeps going. And there's nothing you feel like you can do, and you just keep going back, and you hate it about yourself. Thing you need to remember is that there is a God in heaven. Or you might be disappointed in politics and the election and just all that stuff, and you don't know what to believe because it's so hard to find truth. What you need to remember is, but there is a God in heaven. See, God is the one who we put our trust in, not people, and definitely not ourselves, because we have no control over most things. See, that's where Daniel is at. And so here's Daniel, standing before the most powerful man in the world, who feels powerless in understanding a simple dream. And this Nebuchadnezzar, he doesn't know why he keeps having it. And Daniel shows up, this high school kid, comes on the scene, and he says, hey, I know you're freaking out. I know you're searching for answers. I know you're struggling to find truth. But there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries, and he has let King Nebuchadnezzar know, you, king, know what will happen in the last days. He says, your dream and the visions that came into your mind as you lay in your bed were these. He says, here is your dream. He says, your majesty, as you were watching, suddenly a huge statue appeared, and that statue was tall and dazzling and was standing in front of you, and its appearance was terrifying, all right? It's scary. It's kind of freaking you out. And he says, and the head of the statue was made out of pure gold. But what's interesting about this particular statue is that its chest and arms were silver, and then its stomach and thighs were bronze, and its legs were iron, and its feet were part iron and part clay, okay? Kind of weird. And as you were watching, a stone broke off without a hand touching it, and it struck the statue on its feet of iron and clay, and it crushed the whole statue. And so here's Daniel. He's like, I know what you were dreaming about. You actually dreamed about this huge statue, and the statue would have looked something like this. Okay, there it is. All right, I'm just saying, if I woke up to that every night, you know, if that was in my dream, I'd be freaking out too. And I'd be like, why is this thing in my head? Got to get this out. I don't know if there was a comet coming at his feet. That's probably the rock. I don't know if it was on fire or not. But anyway, all right, that's kind of what it would have looked like. And so here he's saying, here's this statue. It's made out of these different materials, and this rock comes out of nowhere and just crushes it. And it's a super weird dream. And you keep having it, and you're at the point, Nebuchadnezzar, that you're just like, I got questions. Am I the statue? Does this represent me? What's going on with that rock? Because the whole statue falls apart. That doesn't sound good. And then why do I keep having this over and over and over again? Nebuchadnezzar's like, it sure seems like there's some higher power, like some God who's trying to get a hold of me and trying to tell me something, but I just don't know what it is. And here's Daniel. He nails it. He's got the dream. And he goes on. He says, that was the dream, right? And the king Nebuchadnezzar's like, yeah, that was it. Okay, didn't expect that. And Daniel's like, yeah, kind of weird. You dream some weird stuff. Might want to think about changing your diet right before bed, but I don't know. Here we go. He says, your majesty, okay, you are the king of kings, right? You're in charge. He says, and the God of heavens, he's given you sovereignty over power, strength, and glory. He's saying, God is the one who gave you your power, right? This is God's doing, right? You're the king of kings, not because of you, but because of God. And I got some bad news. It won't last. Meaning he's saying your kingdom has an expiration date on that. He says, wherever people live or wild animals or birds of the sky, the whole world, he's saying God has handed them over to you and has made you ruler over them all. And you are the head of gold. But after you, there will arise another kingdom. Now, for us, in today's day and age, we get to look back and we can look back on history and we can clearly identify some of these kingdoms that God is trying to show Nebuchadnezzar. And so the statue would have looked something like this again. And the next kingdom would have been the Persian Empire, which would defeat Babylon just 66 years later in 539 BC. And Daniel will actually be there for it on that very night, which we'll look at in just a few weeks because Daniel is still alive. He'll be obviously a lot older then, but he will be there for that event. And so here he is. He's talking about that kingdom. And then he goes back. He says, then there will be a third kingdom of bronze, which will rule the whole earth after that. Okay, we know that this kingdom was Greece. That Greece came 200 years later. And Greece was led by Alexander the Great. A lot of us, we all know about him. And he defeats Persia in 332 B.C., and what's interesting about this is the ancient historian Josephus, he actually talks about Alexander the Great and how Alexander the Great, he comes and he's kind of wiping everybody out. He's taken over country after country after country, and he comes to the city of Jerusalem 200 years after Daniel writes this, and the high priest of the temple, he actually comes out of Jerusalem and meets Alexander the Great, and you know what he brings along with him? A copy of Daniel. All right, of Daniel's words here, and he shows Alexander the Great. He says, "Hey, you won't believe this, but 200 years ago, a guy named Daniel wrote this, and he was actually talking about you." And actually, this gets super specific in Daniel chapter 8. We're not really going to go through it in this series. You could go read that at home. Daniel 8 is talking specifically about Alexander the Great in detail. But Alexander the Great was so impressed with that and kind of weirded out by it. That he's just like, wow, that's crazy. And instead of taking out Jerusalem and destroying the city, he actually honors the Jewish people. Okay? Imagine that, simply because of what Daniel wrote here. And so you got the three kingdoms, and then there's a fourth kingdom. He says, a fourth kingdom would be as strong as iron, for iron crushes and shatters everything, and like iron that smashes it, it will crush and smash all others. Now, notice these words real quick that he uses to describe Rome. That's what will be the fourth kingdom. He uses words like crushes and shatters and smashes and crush and smash, which is exactly what Rome did. Rome ruled with an iron fist, and they ruled the world. And so he describes this fourth kingdom. And then Daniel looks at the king. He says, and you also saw feet and toes, part of clay, part of iron, and it will be divided. That kingdom will be divided. And though some of the strength of iron will be in it. And so with this specifically, Rome was the last great kingdom that ruled the majority of the earth. Okay, nothing has happened like that since. Rome, by the way, wasn't defeated by another empire or by another ruler. Rome kind of collapsed in on itself. And so since then, there's been a few rulers who have tried to rule the earth. You got Napoleon, guys like Hitler and Stalin, but they were all unsuccessful. Therefore, it sure seems like this nation is still in our future. And so this represents, all right, the clay mixed with iron, which makes sense, by the way, because if you go all the way back or all the way forward to the last book of the New Testament in Revelation, Revelation talks about the future as well and mentions a 10-king federation who will rule the world. And out of that 10-king federation will be one that rises to power. And the Bible describes that guy as what the Bible says is the Antichrist, okay? And that person is going to rise to power and will rule the earth just kind of like Babylon and Persia and Greece and Rome did at one point in history. And that's going to happen once again. But that kingdom will be divided. And that kingdom will be brittle, and it's made out of clay and stuff, and it won't last long, which Revelation would agree with. That's only just a few years. Now, I know anytime we talk prophecy, there's some of you who are out there, and you already know which politician is the Antichrist. Okay, don't go there. Let's not do that. The point is specifically, the point is not the specifics of the statue. All right, the point is what happens to the statue. And so in the next verse, he says, you saw a stone break from the mountain without a hand touching it. All right, so this is not from a human hand. It's not by one of us or by some ruler. And that stone crushed the iron. All right, it took everything out. The statue gets crushed from a rock, and which is exactly what happens when Jesus comes back and establishes his kingdom in the future. We know from other parts of the Bible. And so it crushed the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, and the gold. He says, the great God has told the king what will happen in the future, and the dream is certain, and the interpretation is reliable, meaning you can trust it. Here's Daniel. He's saying, hey, here's the deal, king. You think you have everything under control, and you don't. One day, the kingdoms of man will all fall. By the way, this might hurt your feelings. That includes our country here. All right? That includes the United States. And God will build his kingdom that will stand forever. He's saying it will come. It will happen. And it is certain. And when the king hears this, he says, man, your God is indeed the God of gods and the Lord of kings and a revealer of mysteries, since you were able to reveal this mystery. I cannot believe that you were able to tell me my dream. That was crazy. He says, then the king promoted Daniel, and he gave him many generous gifts and made him ruler over the entire province of Babylon and chief governor over all the wise men of Babylon. And at Daniel's request, Daniel didn't forget about his boys, in case you were wondering. It says, the king appointed Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to manage the province of Babylon, but Daniel remained at the king's court. See, 2,500 years ago, God showed a pagan king, the same king who was an enemy to God's people, the same king who had defeated God's people, he showed him how it all was going to end. And what's interesting to me is that even though Nebuchadnezzar was the enemy, God did not want to destroy Nebuchadnezzar. He wanted to save him. Right? God did not want to destroy Babylon. He wanted to save it. God does not want to destroy our country. Right? He wants to preserve it. And we have a part to play. But first, you have to put your faith in the real king, right? Your faith cannot be in government or some ruler or some official that you hope gets elected. See, what we as Christians need to remember is that the power is in God's hands, not the rulers of earth. God rules over the nations. That's the perspective that we are to have. And when we have that perspective, man, it brings us peace. Right, that is a sense of, oh, I can breathe. Whether your person gets elected or not, God's still going to do what he's going to do. And that should be some relief in that. See, you could be like Daniel, living in a world that's so anti-God, yet still live for him. And like Daniel, guess what? You could save a few others along the way. See, it's possible to live in Babylon without Babylon living in you. We'll pick up there next week. Let's pray. God, we thank you for these words. Lord, we desperately need you. We need to trust and rely on you. God, help us give us the right perspective. Help us have the right mindset that, Lord, everything that we do here, everything that we do is for you, and everything that we trust in, it really needs to all be in you. Because no matter what happens this November and what happens with our country and our government and everything else, God, it doesn't really matter in the fact that you're still in control. And even though our country might be headed downhill and even though things aren't going to be good, Lord, you're still going to do what you're going to do. And you've already given us the end game. In the end, we win. No matter what happens now. And God, we thank you for that. Help us to find relief and help us to find peace in knowing that you are in control. Give us that perspective. God, we ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.